The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this podcast. My name is Daniel Latto, and today in this interview, I've got a very successful property investor by the name of Vicky Boucher. Vicky, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Daniel.
It's great to talk to you at last. I've been wanting to speak to you for quite some time, just to find out a little bit more about who you are, what your successes have been, and why you've been so successful over the last couple of years.
Yep.
So obviously you've been in property for quite some time now. How long have you been in property for?
I started investing for myself in 2008. I did my first proper property investing training over that Valentine's weekend in February. And yep. Sourced and bought my first property in the June.
Awesome. So it took, what, 4 months to get from actually starting to getting your first deal through?
Yes. I mean, the completion was August, but yes, effectively.
Oh, got it. Before green not sale. And that very first property, what was it? What sort of property deal was it?
Straightforward buy-to-let.
Okay.
Because if you could just take your mind back to 2008, I don't think we were really aware that we were about to go into a recession. We knew something was going on in the market. Everybody would still be teaching about putting offers 75% below. And I was so naive. I literally went into the estate agent and looked at the property prices and put in offers a little more than 75% below so they could say no and then I could get 75% below market value. But then it was almost nearly mortgage fraud and all sorts of other stuff. I learned so much from that first deal. I'm surprised I ever bought any more, to be honest.
Well, was this in the days when, going back some time, Mortgage Express, one of the mortgage companies here in the UK, they allowed you to purchase a property at, say, 75,000 of 100 grand asking price. And then you would remortgage the next day at 85% loan to value, thus making 10 grand in your back pocket. Was that before those days?
They just pulled out the market.
Yes.
So they just pulled out the market in doing the same day remortgaging. But so I couldn't do it by buying it for cash in the morning and remortgaging with Mortgage Express in the afternoon. But I was recommended to someone, you know, quite a big name in the industry. And what they did was got two solicitors, and I had one and they had the other one. And then I had negotiated the purchase price and then they were going to buy it at 75,000 and then in the afternoon sell it to me for 100 and I would then buy it on a Mortgage Express. So it was slightly different, but a variation on the theme. But when the mortgage offer came out, because it was my first mortgage offer, I read all of it. I was so excited I read it. And on the subject of a mortgage offer are conditions. And in the conditions, it said that the property had to have been owned for 6 months prior to this purchase. And, of course, it wouldn't even been owned 6 hours prior to this purchase.
Of course.
So the whole thing just fell over just prior to exchange and completion. We had to panic and go and get another mortgage offer. I ended up on I can't even remember the company name about, but it was 7.99 interest rate. It was hell. And I learnt how easy it is that we take referrals from people we think we trust and we think we're being referred to other people that we ought to trust. But actually, if you don't ask the right questions, I was about to commit mortgage fraud.
Of course, yeah. And this was all, I remember those days being touted as being, oh no, we call it creative finance.
Yes.
Do you remember that? And everyone's talking about creative finance and really it's mortgage fraud.
Yes, absolutely. I even did a training course in February 2009 called Creative Finance. Yes. Quite
funny
how to commit mortgage fraud without realising.
There's still great ways of getting into property now. So what sort of stuff are you buying and what sort of stuff are you doing these days?
Well, if I come to that question a minute, just to finish off with the scary bit. Point is, what you've got to understand is that a lender wants you to have skin in the game. They are going to lend you, and let's just say 75% of the money for this house. They only want you to put in 25%. And if you were going to lend someone something, you'd want to know that they had a reason to make the business proposition successful, and that's all the lender's asking for.
Yeah.
And it's not about how many houses you buy. It's about making sure that each house makes the most return that it can, creates as much profit as it can, and therefore you don't have to have 100 houses. For most people, it could be as few as 10. It might even be as few as 5. So that's, if you put all of that into context, you don't have to keep buying millions of property, and therefore you don't have to do dodgy things.
Funny, because when I speak to people, they go, well, I want 30 properties. And we're like, well, why do you want 30? Well, I just do.
Yes.
But without actually understanding, what if each property only makes a pound? You know, that's 30 quid a month. You know.
Daniel, we're speaking from the same page. That's exactly it. I mean, I had a guy the other day said to me he wants 100 properties, and I asked him why. And when we dug a bit further, it was because he said he would feel successful when he got 100 properties. And I went, yeah, but exactly as you said, what if each property only made £10 or £100?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather just have 3 properties that made you £1,000 each, and you'd have more money? But actually for him, he really struggled with that as an idea. And I think it's because when you go and you listen to speakers at property meets, the first thing they say is, I've got 100 properties. I've helped 300,000 people. I've raised £90 million. And, you know, good. I'm really happy for you if that you've done. But for me, it's about a lifestyle. So I don't have 100 properties. I don't want 100 properties. I'd have 100 plus tenants. In fact, if I could, my goal, I haven't quite worked out the strategy that enables this, to be perfectly honest with you, but my goal in life is to have properties that generate me 10,000 a month cash flow, but with no tenants.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what's worse than 100 tenants?
101
100 boilers.
Oh, yeah.
Boilers, honestly, you know, there's three things that break down in a property. Your boiler, your tenant, or your washing machine.
Yes.
Well, if you could get rid of those three things, life would be really easy in property, but unfortunately you have to manage all three.
Yeah, well, we don't tend to put washing machines in many of the properties, so that's quite easy. I've got one of those. The tenants are a challenge. And, of course, my original goal, because I – just a little bit. So I started off as a single mum and was homeless, effectively, living in my parents' back bedroom, and I got – housed by the council to what I now understand, because I have the language, as a landlord had lent their property to the council for social housing on a 3-year contract. So we had 3 years in this place. What I can't find, quite resolve in terms of my thinking is how I kept that house clean and tidy, mowed the lawn and painted the walls. And yet I have similar tenants who just don't seem to do any of that stuff, but personalities. And then I moved myself into a position where, through going to university, getting a degree, being a lecturer, get a job, I then moved into property myself. And, of course, what I wanted to do in the early stages was give back.
Yeah.
So I created a whole property strategy, which was about buying buy-to-let properties so I could house primarily single mums on benefits and provide decent homes for them and their children, from which they could then go on, to then get jobs and, you know,
move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sort of quite hasn't worked out that way. The next challenge I would say to you is, yes, tenants, boilers, washing machines, but is the housing benefit system. So I've got a portfolio predominantly people on benefits, and yet the portfolio up in Liverpool, the tenants arrive. Obviously, they don't have a deposit. They don't always come with a guarantor, although now I'm starting to put in a lot more conditions. So I'm actually restricting the help that I will give people, whereas before I just wanted to help people, and now I'm going, no, actually I'm not. Not unless I've got all of these belts and braces. Because the tenant could just leave, go to the housing association, tell them that they now want to live at number 2 the street, and nobody would give me notice until the money just didn't show up. So tenants could leave with a mess, leave owing arrears, and the benefit system knows where they are and won't share that information because they have human rights, and yet apparently I'm just a greedy landlord.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of the reasons I don't watch the news, simply because it's, you know, anything about landlords is negative. I just don't bother. I just do whatever it is that I need to do, and I'm happy doing that without even looking at the news, really.
Yeah.
So to clarify, you did all this as a single mum then?
Yes. And I started my relationship with Bob about 16 years ago, but yes, effectively, I've driven all of this forward.
See, what I love is, during coaching, I hear stories as to why people can't do stuff, okay? And the whole point of running these interviews via podcast is to find out, well, actually, so you're in this situation, yet you're now a multimillionaire through property, you're generating cash flow, you don't need to work, but you continue to work because you enjoy what you do and you're out to help other people, even though the system effectively isn't helping you do that, yeah. And it's putting stoppages in the way. But that going back to that time when you were living in that bedroom, how old was your child? It's a daughter you have, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've got two daughters. Okay. And they were basically just over 1 and 3.
Got it. Okay. And so, obviously, with a 1 and 3-year-old, that's quite busy for a single mum of two children.
Yeah.
How did you run your days and how did you get financed to get into property? Just tell me a little bit more about that.
Okay. So there was the single mum phase. Then I decided that I just didn't want to sit at home. So yeah. I went off actually trying to get a secretarial course and ended up on a 3-year university degree, okay. As you do, and absolutely adored learning, then went on to do a master's and become a university lecturer. And of course, at that point, while I was doing my degree, I had my two daughters, I was studying, and I didn't get benefits while I was at university because I wasn't able to seek a job. But yeah. I did get benefits during the summer holiday and the Christmas holiday. So during term time, I had to work. So I got myself 3 different little part-time jobs. We used to arrive at the university and Charlie would be in her buggy and I'd park her in the hall and I'd run in and out of all the computer rooms, switching them all on and making sure there was printer paper and all that sort of stuff, and then drop her off at the university nursery and then I would go to my lessons. So there was all that sort of instinctual being organized. I had to, you know, you've got to get up, you've got to get the kids dressed, you've got to get them fed. You can't roll over in bed and just decide you're tired. You can't have a mood. You can't.
Interestingly, some people do, however, and they're the people who 10 years on are still doing that.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But you know what? Some people talk about it has to be painful enough for you to do stuff. So you can have, I'm in pain, so I'm going to do something to take me away from the pain.
Yeah.
Or you can put out a goal that is so exciting for you that you just want to move towards it. So, you know, in coaching terms, towards and away from motivation. I don't know that I explicitly had any of that. And I can't say, in all honesty, when I was a single mum, I was in pain. I'd just come out of a most awful marriage. I was having a wonderful time. And I think it was because, it's such a corny word, but I was in my flow. I loved what I did. I loved my children. I loved having my own place. I loved getting them up and getting them dressed and caring for them. I loved going to university. I even loved switching on the computers and checking there was printer paper and making sure the room was all tidy and everything. And I literally used to put all the chairs in and line them up and line up the keyboards because it made the room look nice. And then when the students came in, it just looked nice. Well, probably only for the first 2 students that walked in. And then that sort of, I suppose it's discipline, really. That discipline is there in me whenever I'm doing something I enjoy. So you're right. I've got my properties and everything else. I don't have to work. It's harder to do what I would like to do in my ideal little world with my properties because they've got to function as a business. So in my ideal,
they have to function.
Yeah, in my ideal little world, I'd like to provide decent homes to decent people, and I'd like to obviously make some income out of that because I've put in the risk, I've put in the work, and I want some reward out of it. But I don't have to get millions of pounds out of it and screw people because if I just get enough, that's enough. Yeah. Benefits, universal credit, all of that has made it harder. And so what's emerged out of this over the last 4 or 5 years is this desire to share my knowledge through, really, it's the teacher coming back. So I started by writing the books, the first book using other people's money was written really as an outsourcing project by my mentor, trying to get me to outsource jobs to people online so that I could grow the business by bringing in more team members. And then I just got the bug for writing books. So I recently published my fourth book. It's just a Kindle at the moment, called The New Estate. And that's actually a storybook. It's about a world 85 years in the future. And it's this idea that I can just have my own dreams about what the world would be like. Well, if I could make the world the way I would want it, it would be a nicer world. You know, people wouldn't be greedy. There wouldn't be people on benefits. We wouldn't have bankers' bonuses. And we wouldn't think of someone who was a footballer or who got big boobs or could act as a celebrity. We'd think of a teacher, a doctor, a nurse, a fireman. Those are the celebrities in our lives. And we just seem to, in my opinion, have got things warped. So I bobble along in my own little world, dreaming my own little dreams. The book is a result of that. And I run training programs now, because either working with someone on a one-to-one basis, for example, like I did yesterday, just having a strategy session with someone to help them get clarity. Because even though they're on someone else's training course, they really haven't got their path sorted out. They don't really understand why they're doing what they're doing and how that will take them to where they want to get. And so I helped them with that. And other people I work with through a mentorship program over a year. And that's great fun, because then obviously you've got a whole relationship with someone and you can see them grow and be successful. I get a great buzz out of that. And that's where I get my pleasure.
What's really interesting to me is I speak to so many people, as you do, and they all think it's about, I just need this one piece of information, then everything will be great. And it's not more information that people need. They need to implement the stuff that they already know.
Yeah.
And through the implementation of that, they will get to that next stage. The problem I see quite a lot is that people are just not actually taking the action because they're feared of getting the wrong result.
Yeah.
And there's no such thing as a wrong result. There's just a result. And then you can adapt to do the work differently, so you get a different result, and that's what we call growth. And there's so many people that aren't prepared to actually go down that path. They just want to go on this training course, watch this webinar, listen to this podcast, and listening to podcasts is good because we're on one. But that's not the thing that's going to get you the success. It's the actual doing, getting a mentor, someone who's already been there and done it. Why would you not shortcut? You know, I've been in property 17 years now, but I can teach that 17 years and you get similar results in like 4 or 5 years where you can get to retire and live by the beach like I do here in Spain. Why would you not shortcut that? Why would you want to go and do all the slog and hard work and hassle, let it take 17 years and it's quite painful, when actually you can go and ask someone, pay for mentorship and fast track those results?
Oh, I totally agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, it can be even easier than that, because for some people, it's not that they take 17 years and they go through the hardship. They spend 17 years reading books and going to events and do sweet nothing.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Really all you want to do, I mean, I've got an event on the 27th of June, so obviously it depends when you're listening to this as whether that's before or after the 27th. But in that, I've created a game, because I quite like games and stories as metaphors. And I'm creating a game in the afternoon where people can play 1 year of the property game with no risk, but actually all of the pressure and the challenges and everything that you would, whether it's buy to let, rent to rent, or anything else, HMOs, flips or splits.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And learn what I learnt, like you said, for me, over the last 7 years.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that? And the reason is because people are afraid. They're afraid of getting it wrong. They're afraid of what other people think. And their fear of losing money, getting it wrong, what other people think, is more powerful than their desire to live by the beach or spend more time with their family or take up painting or whatever it is. And if you haven't thought what you want to do, and this is where I think people go wrong. They know they want to invest in property. Why? Because it's a good idea. That's all logical. Great. Okay. And why then are you going to invest in property? Because I'm going to make money. Yes, good. That all makes sense as well. What are you going to do with that money? I don't know. So it's the same thing as your man who wanted to have 30 houses, my man who wanted to have 100 houses. For what purpose? If you yeah. don't have an idea of how you want to make your life, even if you choose to change that. I never started out investing in property because I thought I was going to set up a training company and teach people how to do it. I set it up very clearly right at the beginning because I love my holidays. I want to be able to scuba dive. Bob, my partner of 16 years, works for the underground and gets great long holidays. So he likes his job. And he's yeah. in a job that gives him great holidays. I love holidays, and I've created a business that means I can spend 3 weeks driving up the east coast of Australia, or 4 weeks in Australia, or 4 weeks in South Africa, or 3 weeks touring around the Philippines. You know, whatever I choose to do, I can do that. But my business allows that because I created it with that in mind.
I've got it. Perfect. So tell me a little bit more about this event. What I'm interested in particularly is the game that you play. Mm. Have you thought about translating that into a board game?
Well, I mean, you can do board games already. So there's already Monopoly and Cash Flow and all that sort of stuff. But what I felt was wrong with those. I mean, with Monopoly, you just walk around and you buy houses and you put hotels on them. And all right, there's a bit of a chance or whatever. But it's not going to actually teach you what the UK property investment world is like. And it's not going to give you opportunities to do a buy-to-let, an HMO, a split or a development.
You know why I'm asking, Vicky? Go. Because I've looked for board games for me and my kids. So my kids are 7 and 10 yeah. now. And I've been looking for board games. And obviously we've got Monopoly and we've Cashflow 101, which is Rich Dad Poor Dad yeah. one. There's really nothing in between.
No.
And what you've got here is something in between.
Yeah.
I currently, with my kids, I mean, I draw a house and I say, so daddy's got this house and it costs £300 a month, but this tenant, and I draw a stick man or a stick woman, this tenant pays daddy £500, so the difference is £200. So if daddy needs £2,000, how many of those do I need? So we go 10. So we work it all out, you see. So my job as a parent, I believe, is to pass on the knowledge that I've got so that they don't have to go through the difficulties that I had to go through growing up, living on beans and potatoes for a month. I'm sure we've all been there. Mm. I don't want to do that for them. I want to teach them. And what you've got at this event, so where is the event being held?
In Denham, which is West London. It's sort of at the intersection of the M25 and the M40.
Got it. And it's a one-day event. And so in addition to playing this game, what else will you learn at this event? Because there's people that are listening that will be like, that's what I need to go
sure.
do.
So in the morning, we're going to go through the key skills that you need to be successful in the property investment game. And that's yeah. the property investment game that we're going to play in the afternoon. But the property investment game that you and I have both been living in for the last, 7 to 15 years.
Yeah.
It's teaching you how to understand the numbers, to work out what makes a good deal, to understand really when enough is enough, to learn what you're good at. Because that's the thing. And it's only for 12 people. I keep the numbers small because then I can work with the people in the room when we play the game. So we have a banker, an estate agent and a builder and me as the mentor. And they literally go around the room and they pick the houses off the wall like you would in an estate agent window. They have to do their due diligence. They have to work out their strategy and their number. And I give them a DVD that teaches them all of this sort of stuff. And okay. then when they've actually managed to negotiate for the property and they've bought it, then they have to go to the builder and get the works done. And then while the works are being done, which can take anywhere from a month to maybe even 9 months, depending on what strategy you're pursuing, they've got to think about what they're going to do in that time. Then they've got to think about their tenants. Meanwhile, they've still got to be running their business. They've got to be collecting their wages. They've got to be paying their bills. They've got to yeah. manage their personal finances and their business finances. And then at the end of it, what we'll do is go through a debrief. There's a workbook that goes with it so that they can then take all of the learning from this and create an outline business plan that they can then implement. They'll understand what they're good at, what they're not good at, where their gaps are. And they've got 3 months ongoing email coaching with me, so that if they get stuck following the event, then I'm going to be there at the end of an email to support them, to answer their questions. Okay. And they'll be part of a forum as well.
That's wonderful. And where do people find information out about this?
We made a nice, easy little link, one of those bit.ly links. So you still use the http://, like you would at the normal website address. Yeah. But then you put in bit.ly, bit.ly, and then /SPI. -Latto, so your name, and that's all lowercase, SPI-Latto, and that'll take them through to a page where they can read more about it and buy a ticket. The tickets are £495, and the event includes a light breakfast and lunch, and as I say, resources beforehand and the support afterwards. So it's more than a one-day event, it's really a course, a whole program with some live and some home study.
What I love about this is that just this one-day event can actually teach confidence, because that's what really you're teaching, as well as the basic principles of what you need to implement. But getting people to be more confident about taking those actions rather than living in fear.
Yes. And the first deal, whatever strategy you're following, I mean, you asked me about my first deal. That's the one that everybody wants to know about, isn't it? What was your first deal like? Hell, terribly nervous, but equally really exciting. Did I get it wrong? Yes. Did I learn loads? Absolutely tons. And I thought, well, if I can bring that experience into a room, then all that I went through in that summer of 2008, you could go through on one Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, and then crikey, how much further advanced you'd be to then go out there in the real world and do it again. So, yeah,
absolutely.
It's, you know, I think there's so, it's just so exciting, this. While I've moaned about, you know, the tenants and the benefits system, and I said, you know, I get my real pleasure out of the teaching, I do, but there's nothing I love more than wandering into a house, particularly if it's a little stinky or grubby, or it's very old, or it's in a dreadful state, and seeing the potential of a property and knowing that, you know, either just with a couple of skips to clear it out, a new kitchen, a bathroom and a coat of paint, we're fine, or even going further and going, well, if we put up a wall here and we took off all the plaster and we rewired and we replumbed, we could split this into flats, or we could add an extra bedroom, or, and that's so exciting. And looking at it and then coming home and doing the maths, which is important, and making sure, all right, I was excited when I was in the house. Now let's ask Excel, you know, so sometimes you ask Google a question, I ask Excel a question. I was excited, but now Excel, tell me whether this is a proper business adventure that I want to go into.
So what does your normal day look like on a daily basis? I know every day is probably different, but just give me sort of an average day, because I'm always interested in looking at what makes the person tick. What do they do? Have they got any routines that really... is different than most people, that's the reason why maybe they're more motivated than others or more successful. Just give me, run through like a typical day for me.
Okay, so the typical day is, it depends. In the winter I start later, but in the summer I get up more with the light. So I might be in the office anywhere from 7:30 to 8:00. Okay. When Charlie, my daughter, comes in and she works with me, she handles all the marketing and events and everything. We usually have a natter, and then I've got something called Kryon cards. That's K-R-Y-O-N, and they're angel cards or something. And they were a gift from someone, and we shuffle the cards and we pick them out, and there's always a message. So today I'm going for a speaker competition. So my cards today told me to be grounded, to trust, and to fulfill my wishes. So those were the messages that came out in the cards. And they always make us smile. Sometimes they're weird and we've got no idea what the angels are saying to us. And that's okay. Just because we don't understand doesn't mean to say. But we do love pulling the cards out, because it's a bit like reading your horoscope. Some days we get cards out and it's like, oh, yeah, that's definitely a message for you, Charlie. Or, oh, that's definitely a message for me. So that's quite fun. And it just gets you thinking slightly differently in the morning. And I do some breathing and exercise first thing in the morning to sort of wake up the body and the mind. And then I'm probably torn between whether I look at my emails or Facebook first. I often pop over to Facebook to see if anybody I know has got a birthday and send them birthday wishes. And then finally, I might knuckle down to work about half an hour later, look at emails, deal with those. My evenings tend to be shaped with speaking events. I speak at a lot of property events, inspiring women events, business events, that type of thing. So depends whether we've got an event to go to, that would sort of shape the day, because then we'd be off in the afternoon. If the sun is out, that will shape the day, because either Charlie and I will have to go out in the garden to have an important meeting where we may sit in the garden for half an hour and talk about something earnestly, obviously, rather than just go out and sunbathe for half an hour. And then it depends what I'm doing in terms of business development. So right now we're doing a lot of creating this game, which has been great fun. Prior to that, I was writing my book. As soon as the game is over, I've been invited to write a chapter in somebody else's book. So I'll be back down into writing mode again.
I might be in that same book, by the way.
Oh, are you? Oh, that would be good.
I think I am, yeah.
Oh,
that's
good. So I'll see you in there then.
If it's the same book, I'm sure it is. Yeah. Do you know what I like? Something that comes across in this call very clearly for me is your attention to detail. Mm. And you mentioned it before about the keyboards and how it doesn't matter what the job is, but you're going to do the job to the very best of your ability. Even just putting chairs out, you do that.
Yeah.
Even checking Facebook, you check for whose birthday it is and send them birthday wishes. Mm. I mean, heck, I don't know if it's a female against a man thing, but I don't even send birthday cards, for goodness sake, let alone, you know, Facebook messages that people hardly know. But I love that attention to detail that you have.
What it is, it's about connecting, because actually this is a lonely job. I mean, you're there, you've got your family around me, I'm here, I've got my family around me, but I don't know about you, once I moved into property, my friendships group changed. Some of the people that I was good friends with, we've drifted apart because they're not interested for whatever reason. That's perfectly fine. I sometimes think I must be really boring. All I want to talk about is scuba diving and property investing. And if that's not what you're interested in, you know, and how money works and things like that. And if you're not interested in that, then you're not going to want to go out to dinner with me or come over and visit. So that's fine. So you find more friends. There was a point when I was really buying our own portfolio, which was heavily in 2009-10, when my only friend was the man who showed me around the repossessed houses and the estate agent. And I would go into the estate agent, have a chat and a cup of coffee because I'd driven up to Liverpool, use their loo, catch up with them. They'd give me a bag of keys and off I'd go looking at these houses. And I'd meet up with the viewing man. And, you know, he was my friend. That and the person who served me a cup of tea in McDonald's. And I used to use McOffice because there was only free Wi-Fi in McDonald's sort of 2009, 2010. So I'd go there for a cup of tea and I'd get out my laptop and I'd run all the numbers on the properties that I'd seen, so I knew where I wanted to put my office in. But that's very lonely. And for me, Facebook, I don't send birthday wishes to people I don't know. I look for the people that I do know. And just recently, a whole bunch of people that I knew in 2007 have sort of reemerged. And that's part of the fun of Google. You never know who's going to pop up as a message. And just touching base with people. Oh, hi, how are you? That little bit in the morning then makes me feel like I've been sociable. Then I just knuckle down and, you know, work on the computer or, as I say, talk important business things in the garden. Yeah. Because otherwise you don't really connect with anybody. And for me, my clients tend to come to me mostly directly. So they either read the books and get in contact or, you know, they might email me or phone me or they might speak to me at a meeting. So I sort of do my own thing, and then a client pops up, and then that's who I work with. So without Facebook or like this podcasts or my webinars or something like that, then it's quite a lonely world, really, unless you go out and make it less lonely.
It is. It's definitely changed. I mean, my experience was, you know, I would go to the pub with friends and go out, you know, in Leeds on a Saturday night and so on. And I do remember distinctly one of my best friends at the time, we were in the same basketball team and so on, and he said to me, you know what your problem is? And you know it's never good, by the way, when someone says, you know what your problem is? And he said, you know what your problem is? Your problem is that you plan everything. And I think about that, and I'm in the villa in Spain today, and I think, I wonder what he's doing today.
Yes.
And he was a runner in a warehouse, and that's fine, because if that's what he wanted to do, that's fine.
Yes.
But I'm pretty much guessing he's still there, really.
Yes.
Or something similar. And I thought, you know, and the level of conversation that I have now, sometimes I really struggle fitting in with what I would term as normal people.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me any better or any worse. It just makes me different in the level of conversation that I have.
Yeah.
And then the conversation I have with my kids, for example, we were walking through town just this weekend gone. I fly back to see them every 2 weeks, you see, because they still live in the UK. And we were walking down and we were talking about wormholes and time travel and that sort of thing. And I was explaining, and I like that sort of stuff. And I was explaining, so I got a sheet of paper and I got one end of the A4 sheet and the other end of the A4 sheet. And I asked, you know, what's the quickest way from getting from A to B? And she said, oh, I'll just draw a straight line. And I said, well, what if you could fold or bend the piece of paper and make the two dots touch each other? I mean, you know, so I put a pen through it and that was the tunnel and that was a wormhole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this guy walking past and he's looking at me like I had, like, I don't know, horns or something. Because it's just look, and obviously my kids are 7 and 10, so they're not, you're not like 18, 19 quantum physicists, but to have that level of conversation, which I think that's pretty cool as a dad to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And talk about property and wealth and about, you know, like you can invest in gold, for example, but it doesn't generate monthly cash flow. So it's got its purpose in a portfolio, but it's not just about gold. It's not just about property. It's not just about business. It's a combination. But to have that level of conversation, I think is amazing to be able to do that, you know, with the people that you hang out with. This is one of the reasons for the podcast, because I can't get this level of conversation with anyone else. I have to go to the people doing incredibly well and who are incredibly successful to find out what makes them tick.
Yeah, and I love that. I love the digging around in someone's head. Why do you do the things that you do? Both your friend who's in the warehouse and you, because it's what makes you different. Why did you plan? You use the word plan, and I like something called planned spontaneity. So,
yeah.
So you have a plan, but there's always the chance that you can adapt the plan. And for example, what I really don't like is just spontaneity, because the trouble with just spontaneity is that people will just sit around expecting someone else to make a decision, and then you just waste time. Whereas if you agree that what we're going to do now is be spontaneous, and we said, didn't we, at the beginning of this podcast, we were going to be spontaneous and see where it led us. So that was lovely. Now I know what we're doing. That's absolutely fine. And it makes me sound a little freaky, maybe. But I think it's also because I combine that with taking responsibility. And I'm entering a speaking competition at the moment. And I'm going to be talking about responsibility. It's something that came up in some blogs that I originally wrote for Virgin back in, can't remember if it was 2010 or 11, somewhere back then. And when you take responsibility, you look at what you've got in your life, you work out what's working well for you and what's not working so well for you. And if it's working really well, then you go, great, I did that. Do I want to do some more of that, or am I quite happy with what I've got? If something is not working out well for you, whether it's your property investing, whether it's your health, whether it's your relationships, anything, you can then go and look at what decisions did you make, or what decisions did you not make that resulted in the outcome that you've got. And when you can work out, you can sort of like go back and look at what's worked and what's not worked. You can learn from that to make better decisions. You brought it up earlier. There's no bad investment. There's just an opportunity to learn how to make the next investment better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when you combine those things together, having a clear idea of what it is that you're doing all of this for what purpose, and then add that with taking responsibility then of putting yourself on that journey, recognizing that some people might not come with you. I mean, I've been so lucky that Bob has stuck with me for 16 years. We did discover, actually, that he's got slightly less hearing in one ear, and I'm wondering whether that's the key to our successful relationship.
You know, that could be the key to a lot of successful relationships.
And I have noticed that when we sit on the sofa, I do sit on his right side, and that's the... Now, either I've caused the hearing loss, which is also possible, or the hearing loss is what's keeping us together. I'm not sure which. But, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a loving family and some good friends, even if it's only one or two that you bring along with you on the journey and you travel together, that's awesome. And if you find that you're at the beginning of your journey and more of your friends are leaving you than are joining you, just, you know, just pop onto Facebook and say happy birthday to someone. It'll just make you feel a little bit more connected that day. And then knuckle down and do what you need to do in order to be successful. Be successful. Take that action, as you said. It's not endlessly going on courses. It's what you do afterwards. What are the three things that you're going to do now?
So let me ask you, then, for someone who's listening to this and actually hasn't started yet, but has an inkling that they would like to get into property, what sort of advice could you give that person?
So it sort of depends on your background, but I would say if your learning style would be about reading, I'd go and buy a book that gave you a general overview of the strategies out there. Not sort of plug my book, because you can go and read anyone's, but Using Other People's Money, How to Invest.
Just give me the names of your books, by the way, all of them.
Okay. So Using Other People's Money, How to Invest in Property is the first book.
Where would you get that from?
Oh, you can get them on Amazon. So you can get them as real books, or you can get them as Kindles. Yep. The second book is Make More Money from Property, from a investor mindset to a business mindset. And the third book is Property for the Next Generation, Preparing Your Family for a Wealthy Future. So the first book, Using Other People's Money, takes you through the strategies. And what I wanted to do in that book was take the theory that I learned when I went on courses and compare that with the real world experience I had of implementing these strategies. Because there is a big difference for most people when you go on one of these, you know, courses. I nearly said the name of a course then. When you go on one of these courses and they tell you all the theory of how rosy and how easy it's going to be, and then you come out, as I say, into the real world, it's a little difficult. So that's what that book does. It takes you through an overview of all the strategies, how they work in real world, what the time implications are and what the cost implications are. So that's the book for the beginner. Make More Money from Property is really getting people to think about creating a business out of property. Property isn't a hobby, it's a business. So it's talking particularly about sourcing, but you could also do rent to rent or other strategies there. And Property for the Next Generation is really a book that you might want to read if you're not so sure why property is a good idea. It's the sort of book you might buy and give to your children, or buy and give to your parents or to friends to read, so that they understand what you're up to.
How many books would you suggest that people should be reading? Like, is it one a week, one a month, one every 2 months?
Well, because that's hard, because if you're not a reader, if you just got through one book in a month, that might be absolutely amazing for you. So because of my education background, people take things in a different way. So for some people, reading a book will give them the overview they want. Somebody else will learn more, even though they could have read the book. They'll take in and get an insight more by going and listening to someone speak, because they need that. They need the visual clues that come from the speaker on the stage. You can get that from videos as well. For other people, it's the doing. So you've really got to understand, even ask yourself the question, how do you learn best? I mean, I like ask you a question, you tell me something, and I go away and do it. That's my preferred style. So I know I listen to lots of people and they talk about how they read a book a week. I read, but I read for pleasure. I don't read to learn. I want to go to my mentor, ask a question, then take what they've said, think about whether it works for me, apply it, look at whether it worked well, look at what didn't work, how I could improve it, and then come back with another better question and go again.
Brilliant. My style's changed. It used to be I would read a book a week, and I did that for years. Mm. And then I just got out of habit of reading, really. And then now it's, I mean, because I travel so much on the plane back and to and from the UK, I do podcasts, and I listen to so many podcasts. I've got like 1,000 podcasts downloaded onto my iPod now, so that I'm never going to run out of content to listen to.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like you say, if I do read now, it's more fiction
yes.
than like how-to stuff, because you still got to switch off somehow.
Yes. Yes, and I'm not one of these people that says the TV's evil, because if you know what you want to do, what your goal is, what your purpose is, and you're actually taking action, why can't you have the evening off and watch telly or go to the movies or whatever? And I do love some visual stimulation to actually quiet my brain down. So
you know what? The problem comes when it's 3 hours of Corrie, Emmerdale and EastEnders.
Yes.
You know, 8 million people every night watch EastEnders, 7 million watch Coronation, and 6 million watch Emmerdale. I know this because I checked the stats. That's every night. So it's usually the same 6 to 8 million watching that. But that's 3 hours of TV every night, 5 days a week, every week.
That does nothing for you. And it's not like during the day they're actually working towards their purpose, as you gave the example with your former friend. I think the thing for me is about this. I wonder whether it comes from our education system, and this is why hearing what you do with your children is so amazing. Our education system is designed to create employees, designed to create people that will buy things on credit so that we increase the debt, because that's how other people get wealthy.
And the tax revenues as well.
Absolutely. And when you look at the truly wealthy, they might use a credit card, but they certainly don't leave a balance accruing 20 or 28% on it. They would never do that. I have loads of credit cards, but the only balances are on 0% and they're offset against my mortgage, or they're earning more in an investment, and then there's always a strategy to pay it back at the other end. And that's not what the normal people in the high street are doing. They want something, instant gratification, and so they'll go out and they'll do whatever they need to do, not pay the rent, get a credit card, get a loan, and whatever's necessary in order to have it now. And so I think the whole nature of our world is changing. What do you buy kids for presents now? I can remember, you know, if I got £10 in a birthday card, I'd have been over the moon. I look at the nieces now, they've all got mobile phones and iPads. What are we buying?
That's scary. I know. I bought, it was my child's birthday, so we bought a robot that you build, a bike, and we went out cycling despite it raining, because that's what you do. So we had two girls on their bikes, and daddy's running behind them out of breath. Yeah. So cycling around. But we, you know, when you say you think it's amazing that I do that with my kids, to me that's just normal. But I think, well, surely everyone does that, and obviously I recognise that we don't now. But it's like, surely that's what we should do. And the spending on credit cards, we even have a name for it, which makes it sound like it's good for you. We call it retail therapy. As though in some way that's going to help cure you. And it's just getting that instant gratification that lasts for the amount of time that you maybe buy it and then try it on, and then you get home and wear it for that first time, and then that's it, it's gone.
Yes, but you're still paying for it.
You're still paying for it.
And you might pay for it for another 6 or 12 months. And whatever bargain you thought you got when you were in the shop, you paid, well, I won't say it's 10 times, but, you know, it could be.
But it could be, because some people have credit card debt. They turn 18, they get a credit card, and that's it, and they die with credit card debt for 65 years.
Absolutely. And I have credit card debt, but all of the money that I've taken on credit cards costs me nothing and is earning me more.
Yeah. You see, what's interesting here is that we've got this tool that we can use, and like any tool, it can be used for good or bad. So take a gun, for example, can be used for it can save someone's life, or it can take someone's life, good and bad. Credit cards can also be used for good. Mm. You know, I've bought a property on 0% interest. I'm sure you have as well.
Yeah.
We did the property up. We sold it. We made money. We paid the credit card back off, and we had an extra 10 grand in the bank. We've done it in 6 months.
Yeah.
And you can do that. It's one of the strategies that you can do. Other people will take that same card and go on holiday because they've never gone on holiday before.
Yeah.
I can use I can still go on holiday, but I've done it using money that I no longer owe people.
Yes.
And so it's about utilising the tools correctly that will get you what you want. And sometimes it's painful because you can't have the shiny new object that you want. You have to wait and pay for it with cash. But that's a discipline that people have to learn.
Yes.
Did you hear about the marshmallow experiment?
No.
Where they give a class of 30 kids a marshmallow each. And the rules were this. You can eat the marshmallow, but you won't get another one. Or you can wait 30 minutes, and if you don't eat it, you will get another marshmallow. Now, what happened was 95% of the kids just ate the marshmallow.
Wow.
The 5% of the kids that didn't eat a marshmallow, they got another one 20, 30 minutes later.
Mm.
When they tracked that forward into the future by 10 or 15 years, they looked at how academically they turned out. The ones that didn't eat the marshmallow, the 5%, academically were superior to the ones that ate it. And it was an experiment about instant gratification.
Wow.
Those people that didn't need instant gratification were more successful. So the people who would wait for the car and pay cash are going to be more successful than the people who just get it on credit cards or on debt. Because, you know, a 10 grand car is 14 grand after the credit, and then it's only worth £6,000 in 4 years. So it's 14 grand to buy a 6 grand asset. Well, it's not even an asset, is it?
It's a liability.
It's a liability. Whereas the other person, they will save, they'll still lose depreciation, but they will lose, they won't lose the initial 4 grand in debt. My car in England is £1,000 Mazda estate.
Mm.
I love that car. It doesn't cost me any money. It can only go up in value, which I love. And it, I mean, I live in Spain mostly, and I don't drive it a lot. And I've had Porsches, and I've had that sort of thing. Those really nice cars. 45 grand I spent on a car, and I sold it 18 months later for 28. Stupid.
Yeah.
I tell you, I get up on a morning, I go down to the beach, and I go for an early morning swim, and I love doing this at 9:30 on a Monday, because we're an hour ahead, and I know that everyone else is in the traffic at 8:30 Monday morning, and I'm swimming in the Med, and I love that. Give me that over a Porsche 911 any day.
Absolutely. But you know what that is? That's a change in values, Daniel, isn't it?
It is a change in values.
And I think that everything in the media, everything on the telly, drives the general population's choice and values towards consumerism, because we are a consumerist society. If people didn't buy this stuff, then the money wouldn't move around and everything else. But that's what I said in my own little bubble in 85 years time, when I, you know, wrote about my, we're not bothered by that things. What we're bothered by and what we value is the relationships that we have within our family, how we care for one another, the memories that we build. Some people work for free because they just don't need any more money. Some people do work for money. Some people own property. Some people don't own property. But we all have enough. We have good health and we have good relationships. And at the end of it, when you come, or when one comes to their final days, the Porsche, the pointy shoes, the blingy watch, the whatever else isn't going to mean anything to you. What will flash in your mind is the laughs that you shared with people, the hugs that you shared with people. That's what you take forward with you into the next life. Yeah. Not the car, not even our portfolios. Our portfolios are the tool.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what's interesting? We speak very similar language, and I'm just wondering, did you do some of your NLP qualified, aren't you?
Yeah.
Did you do Chris Howard?
I did.
I did as well. So I did Fast Track as well, and I love Chris Howard. He lives in Bali.
Yeah.
And if anyone can go do Chris's trainings, they are life-changing.
What year did you do it, Daniel?
I was just going through. So my children... When I was separated, my children were removed by my ex-partner without my permission for 10 days.
Yeah.
Call it what you will. I've got a specific word that I use.
Yeah.
and so that was 5 years ago.
Ah, so you were 2010. I was the school of 2007, and I crewed 2008 and early 2009. So we just missed one another.
I think we probably met at the Breakthrough to Success when those events were being run in that.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure.
I think, and I've gone goose pimply because those events were just the most outstanding events that I've ever attended.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's sort of a shame that they lost his way a bit, because Breakthrough to Success, that 3-day event, there hasn't been anything like it. And my sister did, what's his name? Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
And there was a real difference between the two courses. They cost roughly the same. The difference when we did the training, and I know Johnny Cass, for example, still does some of this stuff, but we did the training in a way that we heard the speaker on the stage explain it. We watched the speaker do a demonstration with a member from the audience, and then we participated. And we participated as the doer of the technique, the receiver of the technique, and the observer of the technique. And in terms of capturing all the learning styles and engaging all of the brain, active learning, all of this sort of stuff, they were such powerful. And that's the stuff that I bring into my training, to bring into everything that I do, is being aware that different people have different learning styles, and you can't just do it once. You need it. You need to look at it from the top, the bottom, from the left side, from a slightly squiffy angle with your head tilted, and eventually it resonates with you. So, yeah, have fun.
You know,
and I said to you, didn't I, about going on Facebook, that I've been going on Facebook and people from 2007 are coming back. That's some of the Chris Howard people. And then look, you showed up as well.
That's really funny. Last week, there's a video that Chris does, and I'm going to put it on my webpage so people can see it. And it's the Transformation Day video about Chris talking about his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. And I've watched that video maybe 8 or 9 times. I've done BTS maybe 6 or 7 times, because I did it every time it was on. Yep. So I got fresh learnings, even though the content was the same.
Absolutely.
I've watched that video. I watched it again last week, and I got brand new learnings from the same video I've watched 7 or 8 times.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing. So I'll put that on under the webpage, and I'll put a link on Twitter and Facebook so people can get back to that. Awesome. So in terms of training, obviously you've done training for Property, but you've done a lot of personal development training as well, like, for example, Chris Howard.
Yeah.
I always say there's 4 asset classes. So you've got Property, you've got business, you've got like stocks and shares and investing, that sort of thing. And then the 4th asset class is the most important one, and that's yourself.
Yep.
I've never regretted spending, and I've spent a lot of money, over $100,000 on training. I've never regretted spending any of that money, because I'm still benefiting from that training from 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you.
Brings us back to your event as well, Vicky, because your event, £500, that's such amazing value with three months worth of coaching at the back end. I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what I want to do. I want to make it accessible. But again, it's the numbers thing. I'm not interested in claiming that, you know, because I have spoken in front of 100,000 people if I want to go back and count all the students I worked with. But that doesn't excite me. The fact that one of my mentees said he did more in 2 months with me than in the previous 15 years, that makes me think that I'm using my time well. Because although my desire is to help and to share, my strong value is also my own time. Because it's the one thing, as yet, that we are not able to truly alter. I mean, I do believe that we can bend time and I do that. So when I want to work, then no calls come in, no emails come in, and I get tons done because I get in my flow or I bend time or whatever. But basically, our bodies are at the moment going to run out sooner or later. We have this thing called aging, and therefore our earthly time in this life is finite. And so my time is precious, and I want to use my time to help people, but also for my own enjoyment. And what do I enjoy doing? Spending time with my family. Now, if I'm going to choose to spend some time with you to help you in your business, I want to know that you value that time that I have shared with you as much as I value that time. So I don't expect you to do everything I say, because I'm not perfect. I might not get everything right for you. There might be a piece that you didn't say, and therefore something doesn't sit. maybe I do give you great tips and you implement every single one, or maybe you do nothing. If you've come to me and used my time, exchanged time with me, and then you do nothing, you haven't valued my time, you haven't valued your time, and why would I want to spend time doing that again? So I really keep down the number of people that I work with in the hope that I can really make a moment happen, whatever that moment is, where the person I'm sharing the time with gets such an insight that they go off and they take massive action, whatever that is for them. Could even be deciding that property is not right for you. That is a great result to know now, or how you want to shape your business, and that they go off and they do something with it. And that's, that for me is the biggest reward possible.
Love it. So I've got one final question for you, yeah, just before we end up. We're just over an hour here. So if you had to start again, what would you do?
Oh, Lordy. What would I do?
Bear in mind, we've just done an hour, so...
Yeah, what would I do?
Keep it under an hour.
It's interesting, isn't it? Do you know what? I think if we were to cut it as a short answer, I would do everything that I've done again. I think if there were some lessons to pull out of it, you don't need to spend £10,000 or £20,000 on your training. You can go on one small course, learn what you need to learn, implement it, work out what you don't know, and then go on another course. And eventually, when you are doing stuff and you are getting some results, or you're getting close to getting some results, then you get your mentor, because you've got some momentum going, you know, and you're committed to it. Some people will spend out £10,000 and then do nothing with the training. So that would be one key thing. I think the other thing is, beware of all the hype. You know, some people stand at the front of the room and tell you what it's like because basically they want to sell you onto a course. And it's not always as easy. It's not always as simple as they said. Yes, you can make millions, but what you don't understand is that they had £100,000 to start, and that's not what you've got, and therefore this strategy might not be right for you, or whatever the story is. And then I think the next thing would be to be really cautious of benefit tenants. Pretty much 100% of my portfolio is on benefit tenants. They are a hard client group to work with. Universal credits coming in, just beware. I think it would be that. Would there be anything else? Oh, and be led by the spreadsheet, not by your heart. Your heart is for your pleasure time. Your heart is not for property investing decisions. Your gut might be, but definitely your Excel spreadsheet, and definitely not your heart. If you ever walk in a house and go, oh, isn't this lovely, turn around, walk out, and don't buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Vicky, if people want to contact you directly, do you have a website?
Yes, which would be the easiest website? Well, it depends. If you can spell my name, go to vickywashay.com.
If you... And how do you spell your surname, Vicky? spell all of it, because there's different spellings.
Yes. VickiWushe.com. So you can go there. Okay. And if you forget about that, remember that the other thing that I love, as much as I love property investing, is scuba diving. So you could always find me via thepropertymermaid.com. So that's one way you can do it. And then, of course, if you want to find out about the event, then we put in that nice, easy shortcut for you, which is bit.ly/SPI-Latto. So S for successful, P for property, and I for investing, dash Latto, and it's all lowercase.
Perfect. We'll put the links on the website anyway. Huh. And just from I'd like to thank you for coming on the podcast. You're somebody I've been wanting to speak to for quite some time, and now we've got a vehicle which not only I can benefit from, but also the hundreds and thousands of people that are starting to download the podcast. And thank you to everyone who's listening. Really appreciate that. But Vicky, honestly, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you, and I love talking to you, as well as being an ex Chris Howard veteran. And we speak the same language, and I think we're pretty much on the same page in terms of our investment strategies and helping people and so on. a big, big thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciated it.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Daniel. I didn't know where this conversation was going, but it's been a really great hour and lovely speaking to you and now getting to know you a bit better as well. So thank you very much for the invitation.
That's awesome. So thank you very much, Vicky, and we'll speak soon.
Pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.